Welcome to ITE 1, Semester 2, Chapter 7. We're already at Chapter 7, guys, and it's great to have everybody here tonight. We've got quite a full number of people on the Ventrilo screen here, so congratulations for coming in. And I'd just like to let you know that the worksheets are starting to come in, and there's been a lot of good quality work come through. And I was looking on the results board on the exams about a week ago, and I can see that we're all progressing rather well. So congratulations at whatever point you're at. Congratulations for being at that point, and I'm sure you'll all go well. Today's lecture is about printers and scanners. And just before we start with that, we've got a little bit of administration to do, and I'll just throw to Grace for that, and then I'll come back on to continue.
Thank you, Elise. I do have an announcement, and then we have the Chapter 6 quiz to go through, since we do have people on to take it this week. I thought we'd do that. So I just did want to clarify, we did go over that in lecture last week, but ACPI does need to be enabled in the BIOS in order for power management to work. We discussed it last week for good 2 or 3 minutes, but I was told to clarify that one more time. It does need to be on to work. And now on to the quiz. So if everybody could get into their chat windows, that would be great, unless anyone else has any questions before the quiz. I should probably open it up for questions.
Is it? Oh, yeah, that's my push-to-talk key. I'm happy.
It is. Okay, so if we don't have any questions, I will start our quiz. And remember, this is on laptops and portable devices, just to refresh everybody's memory. Okay, which two features make laptops a good alternative to desktops? Choose two. Is it, and you're just going to, it's going to be yes or no, compact design? That's correct. Lower costs? The correct answer is no, because although laptops have come down in price, there it's still a desktop is a little bit cheaper. So that's a no. Enhanced capabilities? No, although they're very, very comparable to desktops, so that's good. Portability? Absolutely correct. Okay, we're moving on to question two. Which laptop device is commonly hot swappable? Is it A, the display, B, the internal hard drive, C, the PC card, or D, RAM? And the answer is C, the PC card. Okay, on to question three. Which type of memory is used in laptops? Is it A, DIMM, B, RIM, C, SIM, or D, SODIMM? The answer is D, and that is because they are they're SODIMMs. They're smaller than your regular DIMM modules, and they fit into the laptops. Question four: which power management control was introduced prior to the advanced configuration and power interface? A, was it ACCI, B, ACPI, C, AMD, or D, APM? And D is right, advanced power management.
That's in your final, I believe, actually, guys, so make sure you know that one.
All right, I'm just, somebody just signed in on this thing, so I have to actually find my place again, which is going to happen right about now. Okay. What should a user do when operations on a USB device are completed? And it is necessary to remove it from the laptop. Is it A, reboot the computer, B, choose start control panel system, C, there it is, sorry, C, click the Safely Remove Hardware icon in the Windows system tray. D, just remove the USB device from the computer.
Or E, tear it out in a hurry and hope that you don't corrupt it.
That would be D. But yes, no, the right answer is C. You do want to safely eject it from the computer by going to the system tray and actually doing it. Because, as Carrie said, the one time you don't and you do rip it out, you will lose the data, and that'll be the one time it's really important data.
Or you can kill it.
That's exactly right.
Which Leon knows all about, don't you, Leon?
I most certainly do, and that's something Carrie ribs me about from time to time, or has done.
I would never rib you much. In all seriousness, there is a very good technical reason why you need to do a safely remove on Windows file systems. When files are closed, the last part of the file system to be updated is the file allocation table. And because Windows has write caching on USB devices, which is to say that data that is not written to the USB device yet is stored in memory, if you remove the device without safely removing, that memory cache is not written to disk, and you will end up with lost clusters and lost chains and lost file fragments. And in severe cases, you'll actually end up with corrupted sectors on the file allocation table, which will result in you having to reformat the storage medium. So don't do it. I know I've got a friend, we've got a mutual friend, Elise and I've got a mutual friend who lives up in the sunnier banana-bending part of the country, nobody on channel here, who said that he has removed them hundreds of times without any problems, but it's just a matter of when, not if, that he will have a problem with that. It is actually possible to go into the control panel and turn off write caching for a USB device, which then does make it safer to rip out without safely ejecting, but most users don't know to do that.
Oh wow!
Apparently, you can set an icon up on your desktop to go to safely remove hardware, which is kind of handy if you don't like insert F11 or arrowing around in your system tray, which I couldn't blame anybody for not liking.
Yeah, I've actually done that on mine. It works quite well.
And you know what? Honestly, we've all killed USB drives, and we probably in our lifetime will kill more.
I never did.
Whatever.
No, seriously, I never had. I feel
neither
left out.
I, actually, I'm just sitting here feeling a bit left out too, Kerry. I've seen others do it, but I've never done one.
I killed my first iPod. It was a shuffle. It was not good.
Yeah, but I haven't managed to do it yet.
A shuffle? Mm, yeah. Okay.
Look, I was it was like years and years ago, so yeah.
Also, running office chairs over USB thumb drives kills them. We've discovered with a few people.
I've done that to SD cards.
That finishes them.
Oh yeah. My sister got her one of her USB sticks with her homework chewed up by the dog, and they didn't believe her until she brought in the chewed remains of the stick, and the teacher really didn't want to see it that badly, but you know. There you go. Yep, it was. Yep. All right. Question 7. Which two steps are recommended when cleaning a laptop LCD? Choose 2. This is going to be a yes or no. Clean the display using tissue. Moisten with water. That is correct. No. Disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display? Absolutely, you do want to disconnect all of the devices, and you want to turn it off, and probably take the batteries out if we're going to be super, super safe about it. Make sure it's not plugged into power. Look, I've never done it either, but it's in the notes. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we all do that. We all do it, of course.
But if the quiz asks you, you're supposed to disconnect everything before cleaning the LCD screen. Remove all sources of power immediately after cleaning the display? No, definitely not. Power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display? Yes, as we discussed, probably a good idea. Although, well, you know.
My point is, how are you supposed to tell if the screen's clean if the light's not shining from the back? But obviously the designers of this course haven't thought of that.
You know, do you think the people who design this course really do all the things that they say you're supposed to do, honestly?
Of course!
Of course we do.
Not the instructors, the people who actually wrote it. No, honestly, safety procedures are really, really important, and you should follow all of the safety guidelines, if possible, in the course.
I would imagine it's probably been written by a team of people, I don't know. I'll have to ring up Uncle Cisco and check.
Yeah, it has. It's been written by the some people employed by the Cisco Learning Institute, apparently with some great consultation with people in industry.
Which is the way it should be.
Absolutely. Not one person. One person should not write a curriculum. You don't get as many good points of view. Oh, yeah, one more. Which is the easiest, least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? Would it be A, replace parts regularly? B, clean the laptop regularly? C, do a clean reinstall of the OS? D, backup important information monthly? And that's it. Answer no. It would be B, clean the laptop regularly. And I think that goes for any computer or any portable device. If you clean it and take good care of it, it's going to last a lot longer. So, yeah. I think that's it for the quiz. Now I'm going to hand it back over to Elise for her lecture on printers. I did.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Okay, are there any comments or questions at this point? I'll take that as not. Well, back to printers, module 7 of IT1. Okay, we're vision impaired. You might think, we don't need printers. What do we want those silly things for? Why do we want to have these plastic boxes filled with all sorts of horrible chemicals you'd never put out on your dining room table in a blind fit and hammer them onto pieces of bleached rainforest? Because people love to read off paper. At least our sighted colleagues like to read off paper. So printers and scanners in the IT industry are imperative to know at least a little about. And that's what we're going to endeavour to do today, is to discuss scanners and those sorts of things.
And you might think that you don't need to know about it, and you might think this is the most boring module you ever did. Boy, have we got a surprise for you. However, printers, just do ITE too, printers are highly important, and sighted people go on about them more than they go on about the weather and religion and politics, because if the printer doesn't work, it's the end of the world. So, if you know how to troubleshoot and fix minor printer problems, you'll be their hero. And that's a very good thing for the IT person to be, because it'll stop you getting lynched next time the server goes down.
So much for the paperless office we're all promised back in 1980. And with those Wang computer ads a la Tom Baker and Lola Ward, if you're old enough to remember any of that. And yeah, basically, we still have paper, and government loves paper. They'll cut down the Amazon just to send you a letter if they have to. So, some of the key points tonight in this evening's lecture are, we're going to describe the types of printers that are currently available, talk about the installation configuration process, talk about scanners and the types of scanners that are now available, and describe the installation and configuration of scanners, and talk about preventive maintenance techniques, and a little bit of troubleshooting. So let me begin by asking, what types of printers do you think are out there in the marketplace, the common sorts of printers that are around at the moment?
Inkjet printers?
That's a good start, yep.
Got your laser printers.
Dot matrix.
Yep, we're off to a flying start. Guys, any others?
Bubble jet?
Yep, thermal. There's dye sublimation and solid ink.
And you did say bubble jet.
And somebody did say bubble jet. And Jenny said bubble jet. Leon said inkjet. And it's much the same. The other printer that I know Kerry's discussed in previous years is the Daisy Wheel printer. We won't discuss that too much, but the dot matrix and the Daisy Wheel printers are the two older printers that you don't often see, certainly don't see them in the home environment anymore. I remember my first colour printer was a dot matrix printer, and did it make a terrible noise when it went?
Dot matrix are actually still used in high volume accounting. For example, a lot of invoice printing and stuff still uses dot matrix printer printout, and they are used for their reliability. And their ability to do high speed printing that is reliable. They're still out there, but you're right, not in a home environment generally.
Yes, I am having an Epson LQ on my desk for a long time.
Which one of those? I was going to say, which one of those two printers were the very first printer to come out? Just curious. Not that it has anything really to do with anything.
Well, this is a good question. Would that be the dot matrix or the Daisy Wheel, Kerry?
It's the Daisy Wheel, actually, yeah. There were a number of print technologies that came out at various times. I believe the Daisy Wheel was first. However, there may have been other methods of printing before that. But I believe Daisy Wheel was first. You could probably Google for history of printing technology and it would tell you.
Indeed. And my first, I went on electric typewriter when I think I was about 12 years old for the first time. And that was in 1976 or 1977. And it had a Daisy Wheel head in it. And if we wanted to change the fonts, I think we had to change the Daisy Wheel or something. And that, we thought that was great. Being allowed to type on the electric typewriter at last. Jeez, it was fun.
You can also wire a lot of those. Some of the newer electric typewriters had a serial port on them, and you could hook them into the back of your computer and print to them.
Yes, actually, there was. I actually owned a small electric typewriter in the 1980s, and I think it had a Daisy Wheel in it. Must have. And I think the next model up from the one I had something like that even back then. Or word processor capability of some form, anyway. Basically. There's some basic steps here before we discuss the particular types of printers. The notes are just referring to installation of a printer, and we'll cover this in greater detail. But essentially speaking, when you take the printer out of the box, careful about its packing. Now, particularly for us, we're vision impaired, and that means there's often little pieces of plastic and funny little chunks of cardboard that are sort of stuck in these crevices so that the device will actually package better and transport better because it can sit around in warehouses and come from overseas, etc. So do take care that the any locking mechanisms, any pieces of plastic, any of those sorts of funny chunks of cardboard are removed before you start trying to slam out your first print job. Normally you'll have to put the cartridges in anyway, so you'll have a little bit of an idea of how your printer looks and feels by the time you actually get to the point of your first print job. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, I've made a few mistakes myself in unpacking not just printers, but other things that I've bought, where there'd be, you have to remember to open up the front of the printer if it opens up. Look for any cardboard or whatever might be holding a component in place or something. In packaging.
You should have seen me try to put in my first ink cartridge when I got my first printer of my own a few years ago. It was fun.
I think the other thing I'd like to point out to people is before you even open the box, how about you get somebody to read you the quick start stuff on the box that tells you the stuff that you're not ever going to bother reading, but you probably should, that will stop your printer from shaking itself apart into a horrible mess. They do actually have a quick start guide in the top of the box for a good reason. And I know we're all impatient, we just want to print our first sheet of paper, but it does take I have seen people spend 2 or 3 hours undoing their USB stack because they put the disk in before they connected the printer, or vice versa, and they should have done it the other way.
Yeah, and now I was going to get to that point. Kerry, when I was working at Hewlett Packard, we had the same problem with scanners. It does say, and I do it now with any of these new devices I get, what does it want you to do first? Plug it in first and let Windows discover it, then feed it with the disk, or install the software first and then plug in your device. And as Kerry says, it's usually mentioned in a piece of paper that you really can't go, you can't miss when you undo the packaging for that reason. So, because Windows can get a bit messy if it's installed some generic driver that's an old driver, and or as you say, you've got to pull down the USB stack or do something weird to do a bit of troubleshooting because you happen to have just done one thing out of sequence. And they can vary too, so just don't think you bought the last printer you bought, you had to plug it in first and then install it. Now the new printer could be the other way around.
I have a rule of thumb with that as to how I do it. If for some reason I don't have a scanner or something, what I'll do, absolutely, what I'll do is not plug in, I'll put in the CD and I will not plug in whatever it is until the CD tells me to do so, because usually the CDs will either say you have to have this device plugged in to start with, or it'll say plug it in now. And if I don't have a scanner or something to look at that documentation, that's what I will tend to do.
Although often these CDs also have the PDF user manual on there, so see previous point, you can often go and read that.
This is true too.
Two other points to be aware of is that the resolution of printers and scanners are measured in dots per inch, DPI. If the wrong type of ink is installed into your printer, the printer may not perform as expected.
Ah, there's an Epson ad campaign about that, which has a guy putting concrete into his washing machine.
I'm not surprised. You know, there's a lot of hacks and cracks around, and we shouldn't say that here. None of us do it. Where there are Epsons are, you know, sort of prone to people doing all sorts of crazy things with them, and maybe Epson have finally gotten onto it. And are trying to, you know, persuade people to come back and put the right sort of consumables in your printer, which I always do. I just sort of think if it's designed to take that particular ink, I like to use the manufacturer's version of it.
We don't know anybody who does that.
No.
I was just going to say, for those who don't know, on channel, we have a particularly knowledgeable friend of ours who we won't mention his name, but to suffice it to say, if there's a way around something or a cheaper way of doing something, or if you can fool the printer into giving you 20 more pages than it should, or the ink will cost you $10 less and it still works, he's there, he's done it, and he's got the little probes and ink foolers and chips and goodness knows what else. So that's who we're referring to, one of our 2007 students.
It's almost like a comedy.
TA.
If I'm not mistaken, can't they void the warranty for doing stuff like that?
Yes, well, it's only $99, but who cares? I mean, if $99, you just chuck it in the wheelie bin and get another one. So, and believe me, some of the extra mileage he's got out of his printers is astounding. He's got ink tanks that have got, like, you know, 40 mils of ink in them, and he can get 2,000 sheets out of an inkjet. That's not too shabby.
I'm supposed to be doing a lecture here, Kerry.
sorry.
I lost it.
Now, don't do that, anyone. Okay, so don't take any of these tricks on board.
But as Jackie said, you will void the warranty, but some people don't care, and you'd be quite happy to stick it in the wheelie bin and probably probably record it.
I think the thing to keep in mind here, and whilst officially speaking, you should always honour your warranties and treat your gear with all good sorts of, you know, care and due stuff. But for example, and I'll just say this for Amanda's benefit, just so that you've got some idea, if you're going to expect people in remote regions not to take things apart with screwdrivers and fix them, then you obviously haven't lived in Western Australia, because it'll be 6 weeks before you get your piece of adaptive tech back. So we, yeah, warranty, whatever. But in all seriousness, if it's not your stuff and you can't make that judgment call, you honour that warranty. So there's my official bit out of the way.
They don't call us wait a while for nothing.
Pretty much.
Yeah, things tend to happen a lot quicker here on the East Coast. Having said that, You know, you can do, you know, there, you know, if you're prepared, you know, that's out of warranty, and if you're prepared that if you break it, you get to keep the both bits, you can learn quite a bit from a bit of messing around. But often, you know, you do have to take a more professional approach when you're working with your own clients who are paying you to fix their computers and their printers, and often, especially if a if you've installed a device and you've bought it for the client or had a hand in buying it, you know, you've got to honour the warranty and take it back to the dealer and have it sent up the distribution chain and either replaced as a DOA, as we used to call it in the trade, or you know, wait for the warranty if the item is to be repaired. So you've really got to understand the differences in printers. If you're installing a printer for somebody, I can probably vouch for Kerry here, and it certainly happened to me over the years. I'm sure any of us who have had any IT experience, you've had phone calls from friends, acquaintances, people you know, people you don't even know, asking you, well, I've got to buy a new printer or scanner. What do you recommend? They're not so much asking you what brand do you recommend, although sometimes you might say, yes, I bought a so-and-so printer and it was great cost, and you know, you get them down at Harvey Norman, you know, they're on special at the moment, and I bought mine, and you know, my spouse is wrapped with it. Yes, thank you for that.
If the client is paying the bill. Yeah, I mean, if the client is paying the bill, of course you've got to honour the warranties. Although if you live in Western Australia, they'll do everything not to pay the bill. So there you have it. But yeah, absolutely. Mm. Over here, you're basically looking at 3 and 4 week turnaround times. It basically takes a week to get something to the eastern states, and then the adaptive technology mob has to leave it in their office for 2 months to gather dust. So things over in the states happen a lot faster than they happen over here. I know Grace, for example, was surprised at how slowly things happen over here.
You get Amazon.com, who will send you if something's broken, they will send you a free shipping label and are happy to take it back and just turn around and give you a new one if something's defective. It's not really quite like that over here. You're not going to get the free shipping back and nearly the customer service.
And you pay shipping over here.
I'm really looking forward to my first night with my American friends when I stay over there in Perth. I'm quite sure I'm going to hear some interesting stories when I spend that week over there. But yes, it's called Wait a Wild Stone, and that's why. Back to the lecture. So yes, you have to, basically in the notes here, it's referring to the needs of the customer. So you'll be asked not so much often what particular brands are good. You might be, but you know, some people might ask you a simple question: should I get a dot matrix, or should I get a dot matrix or a bubble jet, which is what I used to get years ago. Now it's, should I buy, you know, a good quality inkjet printer, or should I buy a laser printer? And the first question I would ask in those cases is, what sort of work would you like to do on them? So let's turn our attention to one of the main groups of printers, and that is the laser printer. This type of printer incorporates a laser beam as part of the printing technology. Dry plastic powder combined with carbon and carbon black or coloured agents are sort of fused onto the paper. This is known as toner, and I have seen toner spilt on a carpet, and the first thing these people did before they were able to be stopped was went out and decided to mop it up with a wet rag. Big no-no. The carpet looked a very nice shade of black after the experience. The advantages of a laser printer is that the prints you get of them are very, very high quality. They're usually For high volume, laser printers are probably considered to be quite cheaper to run than other printers. Printers are quite fast, measured in pages per minute. Due to the technology, prints from a laser printer do emerge from the printer dry to the touch, which will talk about later on. Some of the disadvantages compared to an inkjet are that laser printers can be quite expensive, you know, when you first purchase them. Colour laser printers are significantly more expensive than their black and white counterparts. Laser printers are larger and heavier than their inkjet counterparts, and you do have to have a really qualified serviceman to service them. Are there any questions at this point?
I was going to ask about the ink as I'm reading some of these notes. Isn't the ink generally like a sort of an oil-based substance, regardless of what type of printer you're talking about, or what?
No, I'm no
chemist.
We'll cover
etching. I wouldn't say so.
No, we'll cover the toner all these. Yeah, go ahead, Les.
Thanks, Kerry. The tone is a dry. It does say in the notes, and I'm just not looking at that page because I've got them queued up. Actually, I have got them in the right spot for the process, but we'll come to that in a minute. But the tone is a dry powder-like substance, and I have had some of it on my hands in the past, and it's fused onto the paper. So it's as for what it's made out of, I'm no chemist, and I'd rather not know, to be honest.
It's carcinogenic. It'll cause cancer if it's inhaled, and it's quite nasty stuff. But we will cover each different printer and its ink requirements on our way through, Mark, and it will tell you what's in the inks. Well, not from a chemistry set perspective, but it will tell you basically what the inks are.
Yep. Now, it's there's a process here that is actually in your test, and what happens is the printing process, it's known as, and it is in the test. And I'll try and describe it to you as best I can whilst reading the notes, but I would certainly refer you to the notes, and I'll give you a mnemonic to remember this in a minute. When you ask...
I think you have to... I think the one of the questions on the final is actually putting these in order, so just remember that.
I set the final as an instructor a few months ago, and I remember it vividly. Okay, when an image has been deposited on the paper, and the papers come out of the printer. The printer now has to be, will be made ready in the next print job, will be made ready for that print job. So what it means is that it might sound funny, but the first action the laser printer will do when you ask it to print is to clean. And it will clean any excess toner off the drum, and it will go ahead and start doing the conditioning part of the phase. So that's cleaning. So basically, we need to set the printer up for the next for the current print job. So they actually put, you could almost argue that it's the last step that is actually first, but they do it first for a reason. And basically, it has a process of allowing the excess toner to fall away from the drum, so that the next stage, which is conditioning, can commence. So you've got cleaning, conditioning. This step revolves around removing the old latent image from the drum and conditioning the drum for a new latent image. Now, a latent image is an image that is actually, you don't actually get to see it, basically. It's just a charged area of the drum. This is done by a special wire, grid or roller with a charger of about 600 volts. Across the roller, and it is in the final. Now, the final, it also talks about the voltage on the conditioning, the corona wire. It can get up to 6,000 volts, so it can be anywhere from 600 to 6,000. I did actually clarify that. These notes here refer to it as 600. It does say elsewhere in the notes it can be up to 6,000 volts. So that's in question, in answer to what will happen if you stick your little fingers inside a printer, as I said to you last week. Step 3 is known as the writing process. This is where we scan every inch of the exposed drum with a laser beam. It's a photosensitive drum, so when it's scanned with a laser beam, it charges the, it gives the surface, I think it's a positive charge actually, Kerry, is it a positive?
I'm not sure.
It's a lower negative. No, it's a lower. It's saying here it's a lower negative charge than.
Because it draws the the toner to it, so it's negative.
Yeah, it draws the toner to it, and this is what causes this area of charged and non-charged areas is what's known as latent image, and as Grace said, it draws the toner to it. Step 4 is developing. This is where the toner is applied to the latent image on the drum. So the areas with the appropriate charge will actually attract the toner. So it's a negative charge. The toner is, and here's an answer to Mark's question, is a combination of metal and plastic particles. The control blade holds the toner at a microscopic distance from the drum. And it attracts. Transferring is step 5. The toner that's on the latent image is now transferred to the paper. The transfer of secondary corona, now here's our 6,000 volts, the secondary corona places a positive charge on the paper, so that answers the question, it's a negative charge on the roller, places a positive charge on the paper. Because the drum was charged negatively, the toner is attracted to the positively charged paper and is held in place by the positive charge. Step 6, fusing. In this step, the toner is permanently fused to the paper. The printed paper is then rolled through a heated roller, pressure roller, as the paper moves between the pressure rollers, or the heated roller and the pressured roller, the loose toner is melted and fused with the paper. The paper is then moved to the output tray as a printed page. And there is a way we can remember these steps, and so I don't muck it up. It is cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, and fusing. The mnemonic that accompanies this to help you remember it, it's pretty easy. Continuous care will delay trouble forever. So just remember that. Continuous care will delay trouble forever. So that's the way you remember the process of cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, and fusing. At this point, are there any questions?
Just a point. The reason they go on with this so extensively is this course is sponsored by HP, and HP make printers. So they really do concentrate on this a lot.
Warning, Will Robinson, showing my age here. The primary corona wire or grid can be very, very dangerous. The voltage can run as high as 6,000 volts, and printers should be serviced by a qualified technician. Before working on a laser printer unit, make sure any voltages are properly discharged. So there it is. Another thing to be aware of with laser printers, please do not plug them into your UPS or UPS device, because when you switch them on, they have quite a surge of power and will overload your UPS. Have you got any further questions at this point?
Not from me.
Now here's Kerry's favourite. The next one is an inkjet, a bubble jet, or as Kerry's often called them, a trouble jet printer.
He loves them, guys.
Oh yes, get out lecture 7 from last year and, last year was this curriculum. Yeah, get out the lecture from this time last year and Kerry will tell you all about inkjet printers and why he went out and bought a laser.
Yes. Yep, the short version is leave them sitting on the shelf for a month and the ink tanks dry up. Good way to blow money.
Isn't that the case with a lot of ink, regardless of the printer though?
Laser ink has a shelf life of 3 years. Or toner, I should say, has a shelf life of 3 years.
Yeah, look, I don't use my inkjet that often. Whenever I have to print anything for Toastmasters, I take a deep breath and I go, will this thing actually print? And invariably it has good little printer. We like it when it prints. But there have been those times where it's ran out because this particular printer is not the best effort by this vendor. And the print cartridges, I think, in the modern day printers are getting rather small and they run out very quick. And as such, they basically, when you need it to work and you've got something coming up at Toastmasters at night, and it all sort of goes downhill pretty quickly. Thank goodness for email and emailing the stuff I needed printed over to a friend of mine who was able to bring the hard copy from their place. Inkjet printers work by propelling droplets of ink.
The ink if the package is still sealed, if you have ink cartridges that are still sealed and have never been opened.
I don't know. What do you think, Terry?
The cartridges should still be fine if they're still sealed, but once they're open, they'll tend to dry out.
I'll tell you what, I had a situation one time where I had a client, and they were given a completely brand new printer, it wouldn't print. It wouldn't print. And the guy worked for Union Pacific Railroad as a computer network type guru, and he'd done all kinds of things on the printer to troubleshoot it and everything. He couldn't get it fixed, so I was sent out as the adaptive technologist to see what I could do with it. And unfortunately, I happened to be having a severe flare-up of my inner ear condition that morning. The first thing I did when I walked in the door to thoroughly impress everybody involved was to throw up in their waste paper basket, which was really cool.
That'd be great.
I didn't think you were going to tell them that bit, my dear. I've heard this story. This is a ripper story.
So anyway, it was very clear to me that, he made it very clear, like, what are you doing here? You know, it was like, okay. But what he didn't do was he didn't run a self-test on the printer. And, of course, it came back that there was no image on the paper. And so I suggested that he go down to the local Office Max or whatever it was and get a couple of cartridges, and he came back, and lo and behold, it printed just beautifully. But it had been sitting in the warehouse, evidently, and the cartridges were dry, and there was nothing. You took them out, you shook them, and they were just light, you know. So there's a war story for you.
It does bring up an interesting point, because Jackie and I were talking about this the other day, and how sometimes we get so bogged down in it could be this, we could be that, we're all technicians and we try all these nice high level things to fix our printer or a network or something, and it's just a simple thing like, if it's a network problem, check your cables, if it's a printer, check your ink cartridges. And had they done that, I'm sure Jackie would have had a much further pleasant morning, because she wouldn't have had to go out there to find it out for them. So
so you could have thrown up at home.
You could have thrown up at home, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just another point here. May I also mention that whilst there may be unofficial ways of unclogging your bubble jet cartridges, don't do it unless you absolutely know what you are doing and are prepared to take the responsibility for any horrible printer blow-ups.
Well, that area of responsibility is good, because our mutual friend here in Melbourne that Kerry and I often go on about, he did a lot of his learning when he broke his girlfriend's printer. Well, he thought he'd broken his girlfriend's printer, and went and bought her another one, and that was good. So he said, well, I will fix the first printer if I can, because I've replaced my friend's printer, so that's all good. And because the pressure was off, he did, and he learned a lot in the process. So he was willing to take responsibility for that, and which is the right thing to do. Okay, with the inkjets, you usually find that they come with three different cartridges, or sometimes six or seven. This is where we talk about additive and subtractive. In a cathode ray or an LCD monitor, we actually add colours together to form white. It's an additive process. We add green, red and blue. And various shades of those green, red and blues will cause different colours, like yellows and pinks and all sort of pretty colours. And we mix them together, and all three in equal intensity will form white. In printing, it's a subtractive. It's known as subtractive. And we actually, I guess you could say, deposit yellow, magenta and cyan onto the page in different degrees to form different colours and eventually form black. In actual fact, most printers, colour printers these days, actually have a separate black cartridge. The reason for this is twofold, is because you generally print more black, particularly if you're printing documents, so black runs out quicker. And when the older ones that I started with, 15 years ago, used to get their black, they would just simply mix a whole heap of that magenta and green, magenta, yellow and cyan, or CMYK, and you never would get a proper black out of it. It always had this green hue to the black. It was just never pleasant to look at. And, so basically RGB is for red, green and blue, and CMYK is for cyan, magenta, yellow and black. Some of the advantages to owning an inkjet printer, of course, are they're cheaper to buy. High-end printers are generally are able to print some very good quality pictures. There are the photojet quality of printers. I have a friend of mine who has a current model Epson, and she's printed out some very, very stunning-looking fridge magnets on them. So, by just basically putting the, not that she didn't actually roll the magnet into the printer, she actually printed it on a piece of paper, and sort of we had this backing when we were in the business partnership, had a whole heap of these magnet bases, I guess, with a sticky side, and you could stick some laminated card on it and have a sort of like a fridge magnet, and it's good because some of these non-photo, some of these printers can fade, but this particular Epson model doesn't. Most models are relatively lightweight and compact, so they don't take terribly much room. Some of the disadvantages are, due to the cost of ink, over running an inkjet printer over time, the cost of the ink can outweigh the cost of owning a laser printer.
Can or print, does?
Well, it says can in the notes. We all know it does.
Well, it would depend on how much you used it, but yeah.
Well, yeah. So that's why they use the word can, because it leaves it very open. Prints emerged from the printer tray slightly wet and may need time to dry. And printing is slower, and therefore prints aren't inkjet printers aren't designed for high-volume printing.
Just a point here. If the prints do come out of the printer wet, as a blind person, don't stick your cotton picking fingers all over the pages until they've dried, or you'll smudge the ink. So hold the pages by the edges and give them at least 20 to 30 seconds to dry. Otherwise, you will end up with smudges on your neatly printed assignment / report / whatever, which is not very cool.
And that effect is more profound if you're printing on photo paper, believe you me. I've done it. Yeah, accidentally touched it. You might tell people, Kerry, how you often told how you know whether a printer's been successful in laser printer, or which is the right side of the page.
Yes, you can actually, on a laser printer, you can actually feel the contrast of the ink against the paper if you have good sensitivity in your fingers, and you can also smell the toner. So you can actually smell the toner that's actually being deposited onto the paper, and that's how you can tell whether your laser print was successful. And in fact, Larry Skukon of Blind Cool Tech fame, he actually got somebody to print a map of a building out in exceedingly black laser printer ink. I mean, he was at Xerox, so he could do that. And he was actually able to feel the map on the paper. Not all of us are quite that good with our fingers.
Wow!
But yeah, blindy freaks are us. You can actually sometimes pick up those images. Also, some of the light probes have an ink detection mode on them, so you can scan it across the paper and hear it make its little bleepy noises if it detects the black ink printed from the laser, or the black toner.
Yes, it's amazing what you get up to when you have to use those other sensors. Are there any questions from the group before we go into solid ink printers? Silence is golden good. It means that either we're all asleep or we're understanding. I don't know which. Okay, solid ink printers. Is, anyone awake?
Yep.
Good-o.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I'm awake.
All good.
10-4.
All good. 10-4, good buddy.
I have fallen asleep in lectures before, and so has Geraldine. We all put our hands up. In fact, we've fallen asleep in each other's lectures.
I fell asleep in Geraldine's lecture.
Thanks, Jenny. I haven't fallen asleep in a lecture yet, but
I think I did it one day late last year myself.
Probably done snoring.
Oh, there was actually an answer. I actually edited it out because I was so embarrassed, but there was actually a lecture last year where Geraldine asked me a question and I was fast asleep and I completely answered the wrong question.
That's clever. I actually nicked off and watched Barack Obama get elected last year and got told off by Kerry. How's that?
Yeah, you did. Because we would have just preferred you weren't signed in. Yeah, we would prefer you weren't signed in. If you're going to go watch politics, sign out.
Well, yeah, history in the making, that sort of stuff. Where were you when, sort of conversations, I can tell people I was getting in trouble off my lecturer. How's that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, it does.
Doesn't say much for you, Kerry, if he prefers politics.
Yeah, it does. Because when his state goes down the gurgler, I'll still be doing tech jobs.
Anyway, back to this. Solid ink. As the term implies, this type of printer use sticks of ink instead of liquid ink, and I've never seen a solid ink printer, I must admit. The ink sticks are loaded into the printer instead of toner cartridges, and these ink sticks are actually mounted by the paper mounted by the printer to be printed onto the paper and transferred to the paper. The advantages of using a solid ink printer are as follows. Solid ink printing is based on offset printing principles. In other words, they can print out text and images with vibrant colours. Because the printer is warmed up to print these solid colours, the printing process is quite fast. Less waste is produced by these types of printers. Because the ink is sort of sold in sticks, there's no need to have liquid inks in cartridges. And there's no residue or anything left in the printer nozzles to form blockages and that sort of stuff. Because the inkjets are manufactured using vegetables, there's another question as to what goes into printer ink, in this instance vegetable oils. There's not so much problem with smearing and blurring as we've earlier discussed in our inkjet printers.
Interestingly enough, the fact that it's made out of vegetable oil will make the snails eat it in your letterbox.
Interesting. Although most of the Americans don't have the wonderful time of getting to pull snails out of their mailbox, that's an experience, guys.
Grace, you're telling me you've had that experience already?
Every day. Literally.
And they're the biggest snails I've ever seen.
Okay, back to solid ink printing.
Printers are less sensitive to paper thickness and paper fibres. I'm not sure that I've mentioned that point. It is important to be aware of what, regardless of what printer you've got, what GSM or what thickness of paper that you're about to roll through it. Disadvantages of solid ink printers. Here we go. These printers do take a very long time to warm up. You can wait up to 15 minutes for the sticks to melt. So you need to print a number of pages in a short period of time after switching on. It's probably a printer you need to think about buying or not buying. So solid ink printers are highly sensitive to movement because it uses solid sticks. I'm not sure what that paragraph references, but anyway. Okay, well, yes, I see. When the printer is turned on, the user must make sure that it is not touched or moved, even in the slightest manner. Of course, the solid ink sticks are made of vegetable oils, as previously discussed, and they sort of have a waxy texture which releases a particular odour while being melted. So there you go. In other words, they smell strange. Okay, that's a brief venture into solid ink printers. Are there any questions at this point? Silence is golden. That's what we like. The next type of printer that the notes discuss and want you to know, and some of this is in the test too, so I do encourage you to really go through these notes. The dye sublimation printer. The name dye refers to the term to the solid dyes used in the process. Sublimation is the scientific term for turning something basically from a solid form into a gaseous form. And that's where they get the term dye sublimation. So in other words, we turn this solid stuff into a gaseous form without going through a liquid phase in the meantime. Basically, the printhead passes over a sheet of cyan, magenta, yellow, and a clear overcoat. So we don't have the black here. And that is actually known as CMYO. Now, basically, I'm going to try and paraphrase this big, huge paragraph got in front of me. Basically discusses here how it puts one ink on top of the other and that sort of thing, and that the final process it puts on the clear layer. The clear layer is basically to protect the ink on the page from against ultraviolet light, which of course would lessen the chance of fading. It is far from an economical way of printing. Refer you to the notes, so I don't have to read it verbatim, but essentially speaking, there is a little bit of a paragraph there on the dye sublimation printer. Do we have any questions at this point?
Yeah. Did you say it was economical or not economical?
Not economical, Bob.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so some general notes that have cropped up here in the notes. Basically, mind the corona wire. It is up to its plus 6,000 volts on a laser printer. Be careful, or before working on a laser printer, be sure that all charges have been discharged, or voltages have been properly discharged first. Same also goes for an old cathode ray monitor. Never plug a printer into a laser printer into a UPS, because it can overload the UPS. These notes are a bit out of order, because it goes talking about scanners. Basically, that's about it for the printer notes anyway. Just let me do a little bit of scrolling down. Okay, somehow that paragraph's in the wrong spot, so we won't go too much into that. Because before we go into scanners, we need to think about the installation process. We're about halfway through the lecture, that's fine, just checking the time. Basically, follow these steps to install a printer. Remove packing material. Install a necessary printer driver. A printer driver is a small software program that allows the system to communicate with the printer and print. These programs also provide the user with an interface to configure certain options of your printer. If using plug and play, or plug and pray as some people call it, it may install an outdated version of the driver. In other words, it'll just take it from what's available in the operating system. You may need to do a custom install of your driver to install all printer features. Another point to be aware of is that the resolution of both printers and scanners are measured in dots per inch. Most scanners come with plug-and-play drivers. Make sure the latest driver has been installed. A technician may wish to perform a custom install of that driver, again for the same reason as printers, so that you get all the scanners features. Back to printers, should you put the wrong type of ink in your printer may not perform as expected. Just doing a bit of scrolling here. Okay, now that we know about this, a couple of questions and notes are saying here to ask students to sort of, let's maybe hear from Mark and a couple of other folks. What would you consider if buying a printer? Oh, for you, either yourself or your client there, Mark, after some of this lecture we've had so far.
Well, right off the top of my head, I'd think of, what am I going to use the printer for? That would also probably dictate how much I want to spend on it, too.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, any thoughts?
That's basically what I would have said. what do they want to use it for? How much use is it going to have? Cost always has to be a factor.
Yep.
Exactly. Also, what kind of interface does the person have available to them?
Ah, yes. That is a good...
Are we printing from a Macintosh? Are we printing from a Windows machine or a Linux? So, in other words, a lot of printers come with drivers for both the Mac and the Linux, Mac and the Windows operating environments. And as such, you need to know that this printer is compatible with what you're going to use with it.
Another one I don't know if anyone mentioned was the consumables.
Yeah, cost. There is total cost of ownership. TCO, yep. I think it is, from memory. It's not in front
That's
of me
right.
I'm just doing that bit from memory. Total cost of ownership, and I think it is also in your exam. So you consider the total cost of ownership, and that takes into a holistic approach. Your consumables, your ink, paper, how much it costs to buy it in the first place, how much does it cost for maintenance. If it's a laser printer, you'll at some point be thinking about replacing the drum, and so on.
Does the customer need color printing?
Oh, what a great point, Bob. That is absolutely a fantastic point. Do they need color? Now, obviously, with inkjets, it's not such of an issue, but I remember the first bubble jet printers that came out, little Canon bubble jets, are only black and white. But certainly, it's still an issue with laser printers because there's a significant cost difference between a colour and a black and white laser printer. How many different sizes and types of paper can be used? And we touched on this. In Australia, we use the A4, which is 297 millimetres by 210, am I right? Somebody correct me if I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Kerry. And the Americans, what do you guys use? Is it fool's cap or letter or something?
We're 8.5 by 11.
Is it 8.5 by 11, or is it 8.5 by 11.5, or is that legal?
No, it's 8.5 by 11 and by 11, and 11 by 14 is legal.
Ah, thank you. Interestingly enough, if you divide the two dimensions of A4, 210 divided by 297 divided by 210, you'll get a number that approximates the square root of 2. And gives you the property that you can actually fold A4 in a special way, so that when you fold it both ways, either horizontally or vertically, it will still maintain the same aspect ratio.
Well, how about that?
Yeah, I admit it. I watched too much Curiosity Show when I was a kid.
I really needed to know that.
I'm glad I told you.
Me too.
Well, the guy used to say, well, I'm glad you asked. The Curiosity Show was a show here in the 70s and 80s for, it was basically pitched to children, but it was very good. I learned a lot on it.
Good show.
Oh, was it what? Measuring pages per minute is the, and that is also on your test, PPM, is pages per minute, how many of pages will come out of the front end of this box per minute. It's giving a recommendation here of inkjet printers 2 to 6 pages per minute and laser printers anywhere from 8 to 200. Just remember that printers produce colours by using a process called subtractive mixing, where we're mixing CMYK, cyan, magenta, yellow and black. And we've already discussed the colour models, so we'll continue.
Can I make one more comment?
Yes, please do, Jackie.
I just wanted to point out that, and you guys probably already know this, but Elise said that the resolution of a printer or scanner is measured in dots per inch, and I just wanted to point out that the abbreviation for that is DPI. I know that may be self-evident, but you will see this often, so.
And you want to know what DPI is when Jaws is reading it. So what's 300 DPI? No, it's not an oven full of meat pies, it's dots per inch.
Almost sounds like a Vulcan name, doesn't it?
Yes.
Star Trek fans are all here.
And that'd be me. And I actually, that made me remember one of the students I went to school with in the plant school did a thing in their forensics thing. They actually did a Klingon, a thing with in Klingon language. It was quite interesting.
I wonder if they installed Linux.
Yes,
live
yes,
long
you
and prosper.
On, you
can install
your,
Linux in Klingon?
That's Vulcan. That's Vulcan. Live long and prosper. Yes,
yes
you
it
can
is,
actually
yes.
put Klingon on your Linux console if that sort of thing does it for you.
Oh, good lord. I was not that yes. much into Trek.
Yes, just to clarify, I don't think too many Klingons would go around saying it's long, live long and prosper. That is definitely a Vulcanism.
No.
The higher resolutions require generally higher quality of paper. And high quality ink and paper, it says here in the notes. So, reliability. Reliability is another thing, and I'm sure Kerry will tell you what he thinks about inkjet printers when it comes to reliability. So, you also need to think of the specifications of the printer, warranty, service. We've touched on those before. The total cost of ownership, we've already mentioned. And printer into computer interfaces, I think Jackie or somebody mentioned that before as well. There are wireless printers. Kerry may want to elaborate on that. I don't actually own one. There are printers, of course, that will just plug into your router and they can have an IP address and they become a network printer. As well, you can plug printers, obviously, most of us just plug our printers into a USB port these days, or a serial port. We share it out across our networks and it therefore becomes available to any of the other computers on the same network.
There are also infrared and Bluetooth printers. And in fact, there was an infrared printer sitting on at the back of the classroom that was open to any computer that wished to connect to it. So one of my good friends with his laptop, who was sitting in front of the printer, when the printer decided to connect to his laptop, he sent a print job to it saying, "Help, help, I'm trapped inside this printer, please let me out." And they managed to turn the infrared on that printer off.
Okay, serial was very popular back in the dot matrix days. Parallel. Printers actually were very popular in the dot matrix days. IEEE 1284 is the current standard for parallel, is it?
Yes.
Thanks. Now you've got the EPP and the ECP standards. There's a bit that's in the notes about that.
I can summarise. EPP is enhanced printer port. ECP is enhanced capabilities printer port. The difference between an EPP and an ECP port is that an ECP uses an ISA-DMA channel, either 1 or 3, for high-speed data transfer across a bidirectional parallel link. EPP, how is it, is bidirectional. The difference between EPP and SPP is that SPP only sends data over the parallel link in nibbles, whereas EPP has the ability to use all control lines and send 8 bits at a time. None of that's in your test, but now you know.
And you may have to enable them in BIOS.
Yes.
Yes, you'd enable it in BIOS. And in fact, some printers will behave rather nastily if you have the wrong EPP, ECP 1.7, ECP 1.9, or SPP mode set. Also, and I will stress this, you must have the correct printer cable for the type of printer mode that you intend to use. You must have a bidirectional cable if you intend to use EPP or ECP. Very important.
The small computer systems interface, or SCSI, is another type of printer. We don't cover a great deal of it here, but it's worth knowing. Of course, the most common interface, I think, for these days for most of your small office, home office environments is, of course, the USB or universal serial bus connection to a printer. There are some that do FireWire, according to the notes, which, of course, is very hot swappable. Oh, yeah, here we go, Ethernet. Used to share printers over the network. We've already briefly touched on that. And wireless, which we've also discussed. Printer setup. Most printers that come with a CD with a nice little setup wizard or some diagnostic software for your printer. Although printers differ from brand and type, there are procedures that should be followed for pretty much all printers. You really should be unpacking your printer, placing it in position before you connect it up to your computer or server. Okay, when installing a printer, check the box to make sure all required cables are provided. Remove all packing materials from the printer. We discussed that pretty much early in the lecture. Remove all plastic inserts from the consumables. Printer location should not cause overheating. Install your paper trays and your paper. Read and follow the instruction manual. Connecting your printer. Connect the appropriate data cable to the appropriate communications port on the back of your printer. Connect the other printer. This is all pretty basic stuff. Connect the other end of that same cable to the corresponding printer port on your computer. If installing a network printer, connect up your network cables. Attach the power cables to the printer. And plug it in the PowerPoint, basically, is what it's saying. Okay, device driver, firmware, and RAM. It says here in the notes to ask students why printers should be upgraded. If you think you've got anything you'd like to add, anybody, please do so now.
I'd say updating the drivers and whatnot would be a benefit, because then you have the current drivers that you need.
Yes, yeah, look, the bigger reason to update the drivers is that often you have drivers that will take advantages of the latest printing technologies. They can have better dithering algorithms, they can have better calculation algorithms, they can be more stable, and in some cases the updated drivers can actually enable functionality that was in your printer that just wasn't in the original release drivers.
That's right. And it's basically saying here in the notes, find out if a newer driver is available by going to the manufacturer's website, download the printer driver and install the driver, and basically test it. Some of these drivers will have README files anyway, if there's instructions on how to install them. Testing the new printer drivers, we've just said that. Upgrading the firmware. Usually there's a set of instructions or some programming inside the printer that controls how the printer will operate. Like a lot of other devices, you can now get firmware upgrades for printers. Upgrading firmware is similar to installing drivers. They usually come with a program that you can run from your computer. Obviously, you don't want to turn off your computer during the process, and with regardless of what you're upgrading the firmware for, follow the instructions. And most of the instructions will tell you what the device is expected to do once the firmware upgrade is complete. In many cases, the device will power itself down. And if that happens, then you're fine to go ahead. So you do not want to brick a hardware device if you buy, interfere with its firmware upgrade. There's a paragraph here on upgrading printer memory. I did it with one of my older printers a long time ago and got a lot more speed out of it. I didn't have to wait so long for the hard drive to thrash on the computer. These days, I couldn't even tell you whether my printer can be upgraded. I'm not terribly interested. At least the print jobs happen pretty quick. But definitely some time ago I did have to put some more RAM in the particular printer I owned at the time. Of course, the first thing you do is look in the book, check the type of memory that's already there, that it recommends to use, and buy the corresponding type of memory. Check, it's like with a computer, check to see what's already available, if there's any more slots in there, check to see how many more slots are available for you to add memory into. How much time have we got? Basically, we've got another half hour and then we'll quickly do scanners. But basically, it says here in the notes to ask students what the default settings are for your printers. It's up to you guys if you want to elaborate on that point while I scroll down.
Do we want to split this one in half? I mean, how long is the scanner section? That's been scanners a fairly heavy lecture.
We'll go into scanners, I think. I'd prefer to do it, but if you what's the general consensus? I'd be happy to do scanners. We've still got another 40 minutes, and I think we've pretty much covered it anyway. But basically, it just talks about common configurations. Some people have them set up for colour printing, black and white printing, different paper sizes. It's imperative to get your paper size right. We used to get in the old days a thing on the HP printers that used to say load letter, because we'd all be printing with our have our software set to A4. We'd all have our software set to to letter, and we'd only be putting A4 in it, so we used to have to go and press the button on the printer to make it happen. Paper orientation is another thing to consider. Are we printing landscape or portrait? Portrait is pretty obviously the way a photograph might look if you had a head and shoulders of a person, and landscape is wide, basically. You think about really printing duplex, double-sided, that sort of stuff. Basically goes on to, once your printer's installed, print a test page and make sure that you're happy with the printout. I think it's probably time to touch on scanners, unless anyone wants to elaborate on the printers. I would really stress the importance of reading the notes in this chapter before you do the module exam. Let's go on to scanners. Okay, it's not that much here on scanners, Kerry.
Sorry? Yeah, go.
Well, to be honest, if I did this verbatim, I could spend the next 40 minutes talking about, troubleshooting your printer. Basically, it goes on about, if you're printing funny characters, uninstall and reinstall the printer driver. We've seen that happen a few times before. Keep your printer and scanner clean. Basically, make sure it's in a dust-free environment. And if you're dealing with the scanner, make sure the scanner glass is clean and keep the lid down pretty much even if you're not using it. All right, well, let's have a quick discussion about scanners. What types of scanners are there, guys? Anyone would like to comment?
Flatbed scanners?
Yep.
There are handheld scanners.
Document scanners?
Yeah, we've got those nice, even your phones can be scanners now.
What about those things they have in supermarkets?
Actually, no. Technically speaking, it's a camera, not a scanner.
Oh, okay.
Don't confuse a camera with a scanner. A phone can do optical character recognition and it can read you documents, but it is not a scanner, it's a camera. A camera takes one picture of a page within a 60th or a 40th of a second, whereas a scanner is actually a rasterized image.
That's really interesting to know.
That's not a scanner though, Jenny. It's a camera.
Gotcha.
The only reason I make the distinction is because there are very different requirements for a scanner and a camera, and it's quite feasible to take a picture of a sheet of text with a camera and perform optical character recognition on it, which is what the which is what the KNFB reader does. But essentially, a scanner will, generally speaking, give you a much higher image quality than what a camera will. Although the good thing about the KNFB reader is because the shutter time is so low, you don't have to hold the camera steady for very long. If the shutter time was higher, you would actually get image blur and shake from actually scanning the stuff off with the KNFB reader. So they are two completely different devices. But yeah, so there you go. It's just me being pedantic, but yeah, there is a difference. A lot of people think that a scanner is, you know, I've got a scanner so I can do OCR. There are other ways to get images into computers as well, rather than scanners.
Yeah, and, go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say that I work for Permar Security during football games and whatever, and they have these little handheld, I'd be more willing to call them just PDAs, but they got a little barcode scanner that you press the little yellow button and it scans the barcodes on the football tickets. That would be considered a scanner, wouldn't it?
Yes, in fact, barcode scanners are called barcode scanners. There are different types of barcode scanners that you can get, CCD, laser, wand, but we don't talk about them in this lecture. But yeah, they are called scanners.
Some of the types of scanners we do talk about in Module 7 are all-in-one devices, which of course are the scanners that come with a printer and fax machine in them. And fax machine is really essentially a scanner.
I got three of those in my basement.
Right. Handheld scanners, which I think Kerry mentioned before. And a drum scanner. I've never used a drum scanner, but essentially, and it is in the notes, and I think there's a question about it in the test, where you might have a curator of a gallery, an art gallery, who would want to scan a large painting, or even, you know, whoever is selling replicas of the Mona Lisa, let's say, we're in France. And the way they do it is they can't go chopping up Leonardo da Vinci's work and fine work and putting that on the on the flatbed. It won't fit. It might actually. The Mona Lisa is actually smaller than what people think it is. But anyway, you can't go taking down these big pictures and sticking them in your flatbed scanner. So they use a drum scanner, which is moved at the same time that the drum rotates in the opposite direction and produces an image that way. It's a bit of a gotcha. It's in the test. I've never used one. I don't think I've ever seen one, but evidently we sort of have to know at least that they exist.
They are used for exceedingly high-resolution scanning, so you're talking about 2,000 dots per inch.
Yes, well, you're not going to take the Last Supper and stick that through a scanner either, are you?
No, it would certainly make a mess inside your scanner. Just imagine all those breadcrumbs in the mechanism.
Yeah. Much better to eat it. Especially if
you guys are characters.
Scrolling here. As with printers, I'm back to move away from Geraldine's notes now. Basically, as with printers, scanner, what you want to do with your scanner when you ask your customer what type of things you're scanning. I don't know how many times I've been asked about scanning, particularly when I was working corporate, because I'm vision impaired and I'm supposed to know about how to turn text into words that can be read on a computer. And people just think, oh, we'll just scan it and make an image and that will be fine. But, you know, there is the process of optical character recognition. And many people don't understand that. And that's, oh, I can just scan it in and I'll save it as a PDF for you and you can have your file. And, yeah, well, if it ain't going to talk, I don't want to know about it. So it can only talk, of course, if it is text. And unless you OCR your image yourself. So that's something to be aware of for some people. I know of people who are just scanning in images to keep. We were doing that at the Premier and Cabinets, the Premier and Cabinet Department here in Melbourne. Any letters that were handwritten, was email wasn't as popular as it is now, would come in and they would actually keep them all on, they'd scan them and keep them as images. It's been a little while now with what format they used, but suffice it to say they were kept in their handwritten form so that they could be, at least an electronic copy was held.
Just a couple of interesting points on scanners while we're talking about them.
Sure.
A lot of you will perhaps have come across the Canon line of scanners, the LIDE 90, the LIDE 100, the CanoScan 650, if you're as old as me. They are very flat and portable and light scanners that you can possibly drop in your backpack, provided you're careful or you'll smash the glass. They use what we call a cold cathode, which means that the light is actually an LED. It's a tricolour LED, and they use a contact image sensor, which means that the what you are scanning must be in contact with the scanner glass. That should be in screaming capitals with italics. So if you're trying to scan a book with a binder that has bendy binder and it pulls the cover away from the scanner, you will not get a good scan near the spine of the book. I would suggest that anybody who is doing high volume scanning get themselves a scanner that does not use a cold cathode lamp, that actually does use a proper lamp. Yes, it will take 10 to 15 seconds to warm the lamp on the first scan, but the results are better, the scanners are faster, and you get a far sharper and crisper image from those sorts of scanners. My personal recommendation is Epson, but it comes with no warranties either expressed or implied, and in no way will I be responsible for any damages, either consequential or incidental, if you buy one and it doesn't work. But I reckon they're great.
You know, the LIDEs take a minute to warm up or start or do whatever they do too, so you got the same thing going on with them.
You ever heard of a Optic Book 3600, Carrie?
I have. Haven't actually used one, but I have heard of them around the places.
Nice.
Yeah, no, they are good. And to be honest with you, a lot of the choice in scanner choice, especially if you're scanning books for Booksware or similar, which is what we call it over here because we can't access it yet, you actually want a scanner with a high scan speed and reliable scanning performance. And you want to be able to, you want it to pull images off in under 10 seconds a page. Because let's face it, if you're scanning the latest Mills and Boone book, you don't want to be there all day scanning it. You want to be there all day reading it.
The thing that's nice about the Optic Book 3600 is that it has a book edge that actually allows you to get the spine very, very close, and allows the image to come in clear, and also it has some algorithms wherein the book spine shadow is eliminated, so it's a nice scanner.
That's pretty cool. Have you, because you do a lot of scanning, have you played with an iPal?
No, because I can't afford one.
Neither can I, but they are so cool.
They're basically a camera mounted on a stand. Just, there we go, I get to be pedantic again, so it's not actually a scanner. But basically, if the image is static for more than 1 to 2 seconds, it will take a snap of the image, and it has very high-speed OCR, and it's wired into a sort of a computer that looks a bit like a set-top box. It's basically in a PC in a metal box, and as soon as the image is stationary, it just goes blip, acquires the image, and 3 to 4 seconds later, it's reading it to you.
I take it it's big money, is it?
For $3,000 to $4,000.
Buy two, they're small.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, the other thing that's quite good is, and I didn't even realise this program existed, if you want cheap optical character recognition and you can't afford the flash stuff, as in things like Quercetile and those sorts of things, or Open Book, Abbey Fine Reader is worth a look. And so is a recent version of OmniPage with your favourite high-quality flatbed scanner. So you can get yourself a scan set up for about $300 to $400. What?
There's also Orpheus if you want a blindy, accessible but very cheap alternative.
Any idea what scan engine that uses?
I think it uses either FineReader or Abbey, or I think they might have their own. It's a Dolphin product.
Abbey is Fine Reader, but that's cool.
OmniPage. That's what I meant. I believe you get a couple choices of which engine you want to use with that one.
There we go. You're still there, Elise, now that we've wandered down the garden path and looked in the shed.
No, we're still here. I'm just waiting for the conversation to finish. The notes here go on to discuss certainly for the home office, small office environment. The all-in-one scanners, which I have a scanner and printer here anyway, but people get these devices to save cost and to save room. Some of these all-in-one scanners will also come with a card reader in it. Actually, mine does. I forget it's there, but it does have a card reader in it. Some of them even include hard drives. So basically, the
is it worth mentioning?
Printer. Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
I was going to say, is it worth mentioning that these all-in-ones are great, and they save desk space, and they, you know, saves desk space, and they're really great. Three things you should be aware of. One, make sure you know how much the consumables are for, especially if it's made by Lexmark, because they bite. Secondly, make sure that the scanner is of good quality. Sometimes they tend to make the printer fairly good, and the fax fairly good, and the scanner not so good. And thirdly, make sure the software that comes with it is accessible, because there's no point having a whiz-bang all-in-one that'll make your lunch and staple your pages and do everything you want, and the software's inaccessible.
Absolutely. Basically, it says here, the few points I've got to point out as a lecturer is that basically they usually have the scanner, the printer, a copier facility. Mine has a copier, so you can put the page in it and just turn it, you don't even have to have the computer turned on. You just press a button, and it asks you, do you want black and white or colour? And you press the appropriate button, and out comes it. You hear the scanner fire up, scans your page, and starts the printer itself, and just prints basically what it sees off the scanner. And many of them also have an ability to fax. They're typically used in home and small office environments where space is limited. The advantages are, well, they're all built in, I've already said that, low cost. Upgrades are easy, software designed for all of the devices in the box. Connection and setup is easy, one port. The disadvantages, of course, and I think Kerry's outlined some of these. It's not modular with one part of the device breaks. If the scanner stops, then the rest of the device is probably throwout material. And it's not—they're not really designed for heavy use.
Also, if you buy one that's, say, for example, $150 all-in-one scanner, printer, copier, fax, you might well be asking yourself why the flatbed scanner on the desk is worth $150 and this all-in-one is worth $150. I'll just have one of them. You do get what you pay for.
They've been known to not work very well with OCR products. All the OCR manufacturers, like the Kurzweil and the OpenBook people, tell you not to get those scanners and to get an individual scanner that only scans.
I don't recommend them for blind people, but for sighted people, they're pretty good, actually. You know, they can do the copying and stuff like that.
They can do
like
the copying. Look, I have to...
You know,
Yeah, sorry, Jackie, go ahead.
I always have to tell my husband, don't save it in Microsoft Word or anything. Just save it as a JPEG or TIFF or something, you know, that way you get the full recognition or whatever, or you get the full image without the recognition, because the recognition usually sucks on them.
Yeah, they do. Although, having said that, I haven't tried the OCR that came with this particular all-in-one I've got, because I've got the document scanner that has something or other. Let's look it up now. CanoScan, something or other, anyway, that you can look at documents with. But I must say that between the two, I've got three scanners, between the two flat speds, one of which is an all-in-one, I think that the scans, if you're doing image work, are every bit as good as the flatbed one. And I must say that if the it's the best part of that box, actually. I've never been too keen on the printer, but the scanner's usually been pretty good.
It's not the image quality on the flatbed that's the problem. It's the Twain drivers being shoddy and badly written, and they'll lock up Kurzweil or OpenBook tighter than a prison.
What we have here is we have our own flatbed scanner for Kurzweil, and then the boys, if they want a scanner, they just use the one off the printer, and it seems to work quite well.
Well, this is right. Well, you've got your flatbed scanners, you've got your document scanners, drum scanners. Oh, it talks about a handheld scanner. I've never had to use one, but I'd imagine you really have to be watching for jitter with one of those.
They've got these little, like, sort of pen, like, one-line scanners, and you roll them down the page, and I don't know how they work, but I've seen them.
You roll them down the page and they scan one line of text, believe it or not, and then you roll them down the page again. I know Milan tried that with the Eureka. You sort of had this guide frame and you'd slide it along, and then you'd move the frame down and you'd slide it along, and let's just say it wasn't that successful.
I guessed at how they worked. I just don't know how well.
That's right. We've just got to watch the time here. The next part goes into the drum scanners, and Kerry's already mentioned about they're good for high quality. I've mentioned the museum, people wanting to scan large pictures. Basically, the instructions are the same. Get it out of the box. Read any quick start guide that comes with it. Again, be guided by that. So it might say plug the scanner in first and then install the software, or it might say install the software then plug in the scanner. So beware. Again, check for anything that might lock the scanner up, similar to printers. And as I said, read the quick start guide and the manual as you're installing it.
Is anybody else annoyed by the fact that, and I've had this problem about 2 weeks ago with Epson scanners, that when you plug them in, the USB device string is Epson scanner? Yeah, thanks, guys. Knowing
but
what model
one?
Would have been good.
Yeah, which one?
And for pathological reasons, we can't use the scanner to scan its own model number. It doesn't work too well.
Some scanners come with a sheet feeder, and of course there are negative and slide scanners for people who are photography buffs. And they'll come with the relevant hardware and software with which to slide your slides and negatives into. Some of the common configurations you have to consider when you're setting your scanner up are whether you want to do colour, grayscale, or pure black and white scanning. Some of them have one-touch scanning into your choice of software, so when you hit a nice pretty green button on the scanner, it fires up, sends a command to the computer that launches your favourite program in which to scan into. You've got quality and resolution choices, and sheet feeder type settings.
QuartzFile will support the buttons now, on certain ones now, apparently.
Sorry?
Yeah, they tried to fix that in 11.03, I believe.
Yeah, it supports the one-touch buttons in QuartzFile, so you just stand in front of your scanner and dack the button and keep scanning pages.
There are calibration settings on your scanner to set the colour for those who have got some sight. So that the image that you print will match the original scan. Moving parts can be affected by dust and other particles. Make sure you keep your scanner clean.
Trips from America.
Oh, yeah. I killed a scanner.
Yeah. I killed a scanner, did you?
Well, I'll just tell you guys a helpful tip here. Live 90 does not travel real well on a 30-hour trip to Australia. It really doesn't. I mean, I don't know what happened to it, but it doesn't work.
It makes the most amazing grinding, straining, heaving noises. We've got a friend who's taking it apart to see what's gone wrong with the gearing mechanism, but suffice it to say, that isn't the scanner we use anymore.
Well, live 90s are not my favorite anyway, but oh well.
Yeah, not mine either.
Yeah, it lasted 3 years. It's probably time for the garbage, or 2 years, or however long it was.
Ah, one point we haven't covered. Lock your scanner when you're transporting it. There's a lock switch.
Absolutely.
Use it.
And don't forget to unlock it when you're not transporting.
Yeah, it makes a really great noise if you don't.
You can actually destroy scanners by doing that. I've never actually seen one destroyed, but apparently you can actually bust them by not unlocking them.
I believe that's so. We used to get those calls at Hewlett-Packard when I worked there. And, yes, it was very nice. I think some of the cheaper ones actually don't even have a locking mechanism. I'm not sure. I don't think this one does beside me, but yeah, my old Mastix had it. Basically, the notes are going on up here about your maintenance, so read those. Again, it's really common sense. Keep everything clean, free of dust. Printers in particular and scanners have a high degree of moving parts, and those moving parts can fail. Just scrolling here.
Anybody got any comments while she's scrolling?
Yeah, actually, I do. I'm trying to... Oh. You said something about a locking mechanism in the scanner. I have not seen one.
There's a lock switch either on the bottom or the back of the scanner. And if you slide that, it will actually, once the head is in the home position, it will actually lock the head in place for transportation. So your scanners may not have them, but I would be very surprised if they didn't. There will actually be a switch or a lever that will lock the scan head in position.
I think some of the really, really cheap ones, some of these little USB ones may not, but I really could be wrong.
The Light 90 had one, that's cheap.
The Epson...
I'll have to check it out.
You move the switch. I think on the Epson Perfection 1650s and 60s, didn't you have to move the locking switch to be able to plug the power cord in?
No. Maybe on your models, but mine you can actually plug the power cord in without moving the locking switch. I actually had a 1660. No, I actually had the 1660 photo, so maybe they stopped doing that. That might have been true on the 1660. Some of them, Kieran's saying, some of them the locking mechanism actually covers the USB port or whatever sometimes, so that you can actually stop it from actually being plugged in when it's locked, which is kind of cool.
Well, I think we're almost ready for the quiz, if unless other people have got more comment or questions.
And just for reference, this quiz is one of the ones that all of our students often do quite badly at. So surprise us, people.
Let's get my chat window focused.
If good surprise or bad surprise is fine, so don't feel bad if you don't do good.
I didn't when I did it last year.
Well, this is where we can get things wrong, because this is the whole idea of the quiz. And we learn. Okay, question one. Which technology is used by dot matrix printers? A. Digital drop. B. Electrostatic spray. C. Electrophotographic. D. Ink melting. Or E. Impact. Go now. And for the people who got E, which is impact, you are correct. Which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image? Remember, that's toner to the latent image. The options are cleaning, B, conditioning, D, developing, D, fusing, E, transferring, or F, writing. Do you need those options again? Which phase of the laser printing process is applying toner to the latent image? The people who got D, which is, the people who got C, which is developing, are correct. It's one of those tricky things. You sort of get a combination of words, but remember that constant cleaning type mnemonic, which is on the other page I'm not looking at the moment. Okay, and this could be a bit tricky. What are three disadvantages of impact printers? We have to choose three options here.
So just go yes or no, perhaps. Yes, it's a disadvantage.
What's a disadvantage of a impact printer? Okay, the first option is expensive consumables. Yes or no? Mm-hmm. High power consumption.
And for the recording, the first two are they're not disadvantages?
No, they're not disadvantages. No, we should say no, they're not disadvantages. Okay, what are three disadvantages of impact printers? Another option on the notes are limited color capability. Yep, for the recording, everyone who answered Y, which is everybody, is correct. Noisy printing. Y, yep. Slow printing. Yep, it's quite a slow process. And unable to use continuous feed paper. Okay, and the people who answered no for that last option are also correct. Which type of printer melts ink and sprays it through a nozzle to transfer an image onto paper?
It's 2 p.m.
Fusion ink. B. Impact. C. Inkjet. D. Laser. E. Solid ink. And F thermal. Yep, the key question was solid ink. That's right, melts ink. Sorry, melting ink. Okay, this is with that nice big cool word we learnt earlier. I'm giving it away here. Which type of printing process uses solid sheets of ink that change directly to gas when the printhead heats the ink? A. Dye sublimation. B. Impact. C. Inkjet. D. Laser. E. Solid laser. And F. Thermal. Go now. Everybody who got A are correct, which is actually everybody.
Interestingly enough, their sublime compounds are, as we say, those that go directly from a solid to a gas. Carbon dioxide and iodine are two such compounds. And in fact, I think some of the inks do contain iodine in the sublimation ink.
Interesting. Okay, which peripheral is used to convert paper documents into electronic files? So which... read it again. Which peripheral is used to convert paper documents into electronic files? A. A digital reader. B. Printer. C. Projector. Or D. Scanner. Nice easy one for everybody. And the for the recorded people, obviously the answer is D. And everyone got it right. How is the speed of a laser printer measured? A. Dots per minute. B. Pages per minute. C. Pixels per second, D. Pages per second, and E. Pages per week. The correct answer for those of you who got B is, of course, pages per minute. And I'm glad no one answered E, which is pages per week. And I've only got
seven. That's some of the oldest ones were.
Yeah, well, if I had to write a whole heap of documents, it might take me an hour to hand. It might take me a week to handwrite it. My handwriting.
Laser printer's actually the lowest speed of a laser was 3 pages per minute.
Oh, wow.
That's right. So, I've only got 7 questions here. I have a feeling there were probably 3 more in the notes we did last year, but I haven't got access to them at the moment. So, I'm going to say here endeth the quiz, here endeth the lecture, and if anyone's got any questions, please give them. Let's hear them now.
I don't for you, but Kerry, can I hit you up at the end of the lecture?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, here endeth the lecture.
How's everybody enjoying the course?
Good job, Elise.